This episode is brought to you by New Balance. You don't have to be an elite athlete when you pound the pavement. Whether you've run 5 marathons or you only run when necessary, whether you're chased by bears, zombies, monsters, the apocalypse is coming. But New Balance will have you covered regardless. Whether you need shoes for comfort, stability, or race day speed, they've got you covered. Because the only right way to run is your way. New Balance. Run your way. Visit newbalance.com/running to learn more.
There's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
We have merch back up.
I can't believe it. Is it store.gmfsd.com?
It is store.gmfsd.com.
It will be, and it is.
But we have season 2 limited edition merch available for 1 month only, available for purchase. Now, once it is gone, it is gone. There will be no more season 2 artwork designs unless something crazy happens and it comes back. But more than likely, it will never come back. We have new season 3 stuff that will be coming after all of the season 2 stuff sells out and we've got that set up.
You guys better get it. It's limited edition. It'll never come back again. You can support us and our dreams.
Hello, elegant listeners, and welcome to Go My Favorite Sports Team, Episode 2, Season 3, as we continue to analyze the sports world together and also introduce you to the sporting nature of life.
I'll take it from here, Tyler. Don't you worry. I got this. I'm Markiplier. I'm here to talk about sports. But before I do that, I got a bone to pick with someone. Actually, it's not really a bone. I was trying to word my response to this because I thought it was really funny. So just to jump right into the content, this is actually not on the GMFST subreddit. If you go to reddit.com/r/GMFST, you'll find all the conversations about sports and this podcast. But there was a post as I was looking up jacuzzis that I saw on the Distractable subreddit that was getting some traction that I just had to talk about because it brought me back to my days in college.
Ah, the glorious days of parkour adventures, trying out new things, you know, seeing if you could become an athlete, those types of stuff. Yeah,
well, this is actually the studying part of college, the classes.
Oh, never mind. The less important stuff, the stuff we don't talk about.
Yeah, especially those athletes. They don't need to worry about that stuff. But for those of you who don't know, I went to engineering school. I didn't graduate, but I was 2 semesters away from graduating. It's a long story. I quit to pursue YouTube, and it worked out pretty nicely, I'd say.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about. It definitely didn't work out at all.
You're right, absolutely. But I took the biomedical engineering course was a 5-year course. So I took 4.5 years, essentially, of biomedical engineering. And I'd gotten pretty close. I actually worked an internship at a biomedical company. It was called Covidian. I worked on contrast injectors. And I say worked on, I just mostly did the tests on syringes to make sure that they could handle the right pressures. So there's a post here that was on the subreddit for Distractable that said, by Odd Independence 2870, Mark went into the wrong type of engineering, which is quite a bold statement just to make.
Yeah.
quote, this is very random and I am sorry. It took me a second listen of all the podcast episodes to make this connection. This very true, absolute, must be true connection. Mark's main interests are all fields of electrical engineering. Everything about light is covered in electrical engineering, which includes lenses. When he talked about designing his own lenses in, quote, We Hate Christmas, I was laughing because I was sitting in class learning exactly that type of info just a few weeks ago. He also loves computers and even talked about learning to design his own chips. This is, again, a field covered in electrical engineering. Also, a big chunk of biomedical engineering is just electrical engineering anyway. That statement is the funniest thing they could have possibly said, because all through engineering school, you know who had the biggest egos of any engineers? The goddamn electrical engineers. It was always those smarmy do-nothings that were like, oh, every field is electrical engineering. It's the only one that matters. Not understanding that, like, they're basically claiming physics. Oh yeah, physics is just electrical engineering anyway. Math majors are malding because math is just electrical engineering anyway. None of these other disciplines require any of these other things. It is by far the most, actually it's between electrical engineers and it's chemical engineers that both say they have the hardest. Chemical engineers, which both take the, oh, we got so hard. Oh God, we have no idea. I'm sorry. Since biomedical is basically electrical engineering, all those anatomy and physiology courses that I took, because biomedical engineering is a path to med school, you take enough anatomy and physiology mm-hmm. and human biology courses to go to med school if you wanted to, and you could get right in without any other qualifications, because that's how comprehensive the biomedical engineering degree is, in addition to taking all of the physics requirements, yes, the electrical requirements, yes, also chemical requirements. I took almost as much organic chemistry as any other chemical engineer. I took almost as much electrical courses as any electrical engineer, and I took all the basics like physics and like all the other courses, in addition to all the biology and anatomy courses, because biomedical engineering is the hardest discipline, period. There is no argument, because they do everything. It's all of the courses. It's all of them.
So eat that.
I took so much math, I was two classes away from minoring in math. That's how advanced, and that's like engineering as a basics. That's what it is. Every other thing that you take, biomedical engineer, like, it's just because no one wants to do biomedical engineering. There are not that many people. Electrical engineering is overloaded to the tits with a bunch of egotistical people that think that it's the most important discipline in the world, and only they could possibly comprehend all the information. Chemical engineer is the exact same. They're just like, oh my God, you wouldn't understand all the organic chemistry classes I had to take. It's like, you took one more than me. You took one more. One. It's a running joke that those electrical engineers are the most egotistical of any type. And you don't hear biomedical engineers complaining about how difficult it was. You don't, because you hear it enough from all the other ones.
You know what I think it is? It's because those that do biomedical engineering are just stronger people.
They are, actually. You're right. You're 100% right. Absolutely. I'm glad you're brave enough to say it.
Listen, a large portion of my family is engineers. My brother has an engineering degree in aerospace engineering. My uncle, I think, is mechanical, but also is like also into chemical engineering. I have a cousin in chemical engineering. I have a ton of engineers in my family. So I've heard plenty of the engineering talk to where I can understand what you're talking about. And that's why it made me laugh so much.
It was so funny. It's like the thing about engineering is that there's an umbrella of like full, just engineering as a basics is the understanding of physics and how things in the world behave. That's the basic level, but also not that, I mean, that's theoretical and physics majors do that, but it's like how to build practical applications on top of that knowledge. That's the basis of engineering. Then there's disciplines for it. Electrical engineering is one discipline. One. It's one discipline of many. And just because you're an electrical engineer doesn't mean that you have a full understanding of optical engineering, because that's a subset of it. Just because the electromagnetic spectrum just so happens to contain light doesn't mean that that's automatically electrical engineering.
But also, like, as shown in physics, sometimes acts like a particle, which then equates a little bit towards chemical engineering as well as mechanical engineering.
Yeah, all the organic chemistry about light. Well, actually, there are some optically reactive chemicals, and that is an interesting part of it. But it's just like, I swear, I heard this so much. And what's fascinating is, like, as a biomedical engineer, my entire class had 20 biomedical engineers in a school that had about 1,000 engineers. There were 20 of us. not a lot. There were, mm-hmm. and by the time I was in my senior year, it had dropped by half. There were about 11 of us. There were not a lot. And what would happen is people would forget that we even exist and we would just show up in random classes. So like I'd just be in an engineering class or a organic chemistry class. And we're like, well, where did you come from? And then I would just be in another random, you know, electrical class. I'm like, who the fuck are you? And I'm like, I don't even know why I'm here. I don't understand any of this. We're all just as lost. D stands for diploma. I had B's. I had 3.1 GPA.
Nice.
Which for that, I was ecstatic for.
I mean, I still remember our car ride together when you were asking me, you asked me my thoughts on you dropping out to pursue YouTube at one point. I still remember this car ride where we had that discussion because you were like, I only have 2 semesters left. Like I could power through and do it, but also this is really pulling me in the direction. We had a really good discussion about that decision you ended up making. So I still remember that conversation. I don't know if you remember that conversation, but.
I think I do. It's quite a while ago, but yeah, it's engineering school.
Different times.
Originally, I went in for civil engineering, which is like, okay, we can all agree that there's an easy one. It's civil engineering. It's not easy because you can build a building, it falls down, but there's really not that many advancements in buildings. I'm just going to say that. I know it's a very brave statement to make, but they're not really making groundbreaking new buildings. Occasionally, you know, the tallest building in the world, everyone goes like, oh, wow, that's great.
Or like, you know, earthquake resistant advantages and stuff like that. And as materials get advanced, you know, then that becomes a thing.
Civil engineers are molding right now. They're just like,
but since you brought up the Reddit and you brought up Distractables Reddit, but Go's Reddit officially hit 10,000 contributors, followers, or whatever it is on Reddit.
Wow. Well done, everybody. Well done.
So that's huge. Congrats. Thank you guys for going over there and interacting with us. I'm pretty excited about that. We're excited to hear more of your jacuzzis, and I'm expecting plenty from engineers now. So...
No, it's going to be, I swear, there's going to be anyone out there that's an engineering major that is not electrical, back me up on this. There's no bigger egos than electrical and chemical engineers. And if you're one of those, you got to admit, you got an ego.
All right. So do you have any other jacuzzis, or should I jump into the sports news?
I might have taken up all the time for that.
All right. Let's jump into the sport news then. One of the really cool ones that hit headlines recently is that a Welsh rugby star, Luis Rees-Zammit, agreed to an NFL deal with the Chiefs. And so he's one of the best wingers in rugby. In world rugby, period. And he just signed a deal with the Kansas City Chiefs to play NFL football. So bringing in more people from outside of the U.S. to try American football, especially coming from rugby, is huge. And it's also interesting because the NFL just outlawed hip drop tackles, which are related to rugby. They're taken from rugby because of injury reasons. There's a lot of backlash from the Players Association for this because it's like, how are we going to play defense now? We can't hit them high. We can't hit them low. Now we can't drop our weight to take them down. So it's a whole mess. Huh. But the fact that a Welsh rugby star is coming over and signing an NFL deal with the Chiefs is huge news internationally.
Well, that's cool. I mean, I saw some clips. I don't know where it was, but I saw some clips of American football players playing rugby and doing really well, like doing astonishingly well, just because some of those football players are massive. Like they're just big. And when it comes to rugby, sometimes size makes all the difference in the world.
Well, they're also fast. It's not just that they're big and fast, which is huge in rugby. The other news that I have actually relates to the topic of today's episode, which is based around the Boston Marathon and marathons in general. So it's a marathon primer. British runner Jasmine Paris became the first woman to finish the Barkley Marathons just 99 seconds before the time limit for completing it.
What is this?
The Barkley Marathons. It's a like multi-marathon. It's like part of the ultra marathon series. It's considered one of the most grueling courses in marathons. Paris was one of 5 finishers in the 2024 edition of the Barkley Marathons, and they completed for fourth with a time of 59 hours, 30 minutes, and 32 seconds.
Uh-huh. I think I've heard about this.
The brainchild of runner Gary Cantrell takes place in Tennessee's Frozen Head State Park. It's inspired by the 1977 prison escape by James Earl Ray, who was the assassinator of Martin Luther King Jr. So this was his escape route, apparently.
Assassinator? I think they just call him the assassin.
That makes more sense. What the hell did I...
Not to... I mean, it's a very serious subject, but also that's kind of funny.
Because it's written in a different tense, so it threw me off.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
But apparently Ray traveled only 8 miles in just over 2 days after escaping Brushy Mountain Penitentiary before he was recaptured, leading Cantrell to muse he could cover 100 miles in the same amount of time. So it was inspired by his run and the fact that he was captured and he couldn't get very far. And this runner was like, oh, I can do better than him. The race consists of 5 loops around 20 miles each for a total of 100 to 130 miles through brushy mountains with an elevation gain of around 63,000 feet. And the athletes run the course over 3 sleepless days and nights, and there is no aid stations, phones, or GPS to help with navigation.
Oh!
Getting lost as well as falling and getting injured in the brush is par for the course for this race.
Okay, so I did see something about this. I was on TikTok and I saw that this lady was finishing a race, and I think it was this race, and she finished in like 59 minutes, like you said, just before the race officially ended. What was it?
59 hours, 30 minutes, and 32 seconds.
And how many before the deadline was it?
99 seconds.
Oh, it was that close. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw. I didn't understand why it was such a huge deal. I mean, like, so I saw like the first woman to finish this marathon, and I was like, man, I would have thought there would have been more. What you're saying makes a lot more sense about this being one of the toughest.
Yeah, it's so tough that only 5 finished. I don't know how many started the race or how many people have died trying to do this, because you're literally running for 3 days straight. But, you know, it's just a thing, I guess, that people do. Ultra marathoners, man.
Okay, this is funny. The Barclay is limited to 40 runners and usually fills up quickly the day registration opens. Requirements and times to submit an entry application are closely guarded, secret, with no details advertised publicly. Potential entrants must complete an essay on, quote, why I should be allowed to run in the Barclay, pay a $1.60 application fee, and complete other requirements subject to change. If accepted, an entrant received a letter of condolence upon arriving. First-time Barclay runners, known as virgins, are required to bring a license plate from their state country as part of the entrance fee. Previous racers are required to bring an additional fee, which in the past has included things like a white shirt, socks, a flannel shirt, as a donation for being a non-finisher. These donations are apparently based on the current needs of Lazarus Lake at the time. Prior finishers of the marathon who return to run again must submit a pack of Camel cigarettes as part of the registration fee. Race bib number one is always given to the person deemed to be least likely to finish one lap out of all who have applied. A, quote, human sacrifice, as Cantrell calls it.
Oh my God.
That's hilarious.
That's insane.
That's really funny.
So that gives you, paints you perspective on the types of people that run marathons.
Oh no, it gets worse. The competitors have no idea when the race will start.
What?
They arrive on scene within 1 hour. They'll say it's going to start within an hour. And then they stand around and wait until they hear the sound of Cantrell, the organizer, blowing a conch. They have to wait until a random ass time when he goes.
It sounds like he's really trying to simulate you just got out of prison or something.
And you have to find between 9 and 15 books along the course and remove
what?
The page corresponding to the runner's race number from each book as proof of completion. Because of this, competitors are only issued odd numbers. Competitors get a new race number and thus a new page requirement at the start of every lap.
Oh my God.
So they have to find a book with no map, no GPS. Oh my God.
And stay on the trail and not die for 3 days. This is insane.
This is ridiculous.
Well, it sounds like we're gonna have to cover this at some point.
All right, not it.
We're not doing it.
Not I'm not it. Doing it. I already it. Not it, dude.
Yeah, well, then I guess that's our researcher. You gotta run. No, or Sam.
Okay, good.
Sam, good luck. This episode is brought to you by New Balance. You don't have to be an elite athlete when you pound the pavement. Whether you've run 5 marathons or you only run when necessary, whether you're chased by bears, zombies, monsters, the apocalypse is coming. But New Balance will have you covered regardless. Whether you need shoes for comfort, stability, or race day speed, they've got you covered. Because the only right way to run is your way. New Balance. run your way. Visit newbalance.com/running to learn more. All right, so we're going to talk about the Boston Marathon, which is less insane than that, but still, to me, crazy. I'm not a distance runner. I've never been a distance runner. It's never been a thing that I've done. What's the farthest that you think you have run in one session, Mark?
In one, I know this. I've run, I think I've run 5 miles. That's the most I've run. And that was when I was really getting into running.
I think that's probably close to the most I have run, too, in one go.
Yeah, which for those who are runners, that's not a lot. But literally, you know, 5 miles is a lot of distance. It's a lot of time running. That's the thing. It just gets a lot of time. I wasn't even running fast. I was running probably around 10-minute miles, you know, not incredibly fast, just a pace that I could grind it out at. And I was, by the end of it, I was just bored. I wasn't really that I was tired, of course, and sweaty, but you hit a rhythm. You do hit a rhythm. But I never got the high. I never got the yippee. I've always been, I fucking hate running. I hate running. I hate it. I hate it. So boring.
I understand that. That's why you use that one app that you use, right? Where like zombies chase you or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes it at least a little fun. But then for some reason, the GPS wasn't working and I got mad at it.
That's totally fair.
I kept losing the chases and I'm like, well, it's not even working. So what's the point?
Distance running takes not only physical perseverance and endurance, but it's also a mental challenge to try not to get bored. It's the try not to get bored while running challenge.
Yeah, that is the thing. That is the thing.
But you're pushing your body to the limit. You're running hours on end and you have a rush of endorphins as you finish the crossing, the finish line. When you finally complete the 26.6 miles, it is for a marathon. There's endorphins. You're excited. And I don't know why people do it because they have to take a total day off the next day and they're like, don't like do anything. This upcoming Monday on April 15th, the historic Boston Marathon will be taking place. If you don't know, it takes place in Boston, Massachusetts. Each year, around 30,000 people run 26.2. My bad. It was 13.6 is the half marathon. 26.2 miles from Hopkinton, Massachusetts to Boylston Street in Boston. And this street is shuts down. Well, this event shuts down most of the area as about 500,000 people line the course to cheer on the runners. It's one of the oldest annual marathons to ever exist. I think it is the oldest annual reoccurring marathon.
Cool.
And marathons are considered the ultimate test of endurance for runners, as runners trek miles on end for an average of almost 4 hours. Recently, in 2011, the world record was broken. Jeffrey Mutai won the race in 2 hours, 3 minutes, and 2 seconds.
Cool. What was 2 hours and 3 minutes is great. Has the 2 hour mark been broken yet?
I don't think so.
I know they've been getting closer and I know that. OK, so, yeah, we might have mentioned this before, but.
Oh, yeah. It's in the New York Times.
Eliud Kipchoge broke the 2 hour marathon barrier, yeah. But that was not in an official marathon. And this was done with all kinds of help, not help as in helping the run, but pacing help. You had a pace car. You had pace runners to take the wind away.
Oh, it's the marathon distance. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So there was a lot to help with that. And it basically made it not official, but 2 hours and 3 minutes is very, very close. To be able to break that barrier would be a huge human achievement. And I know it'll happen someday. Like it's one of those things so tantalizingly close. But then again, the difference between 3 minutes and a marathon of that distance is a lot. It is quite a bit.
I mean, it's like in swimming, shaving off a second is insane. So it's like,
yeah, it's kind of crazy because to run even like the 2 hour and 3 minute, you're running basically a little over a 4 minute mile, which back in the early 1900s was not even considered possible. You're running like it's like a 4 minute and 30 second mile.
For 2 hours, it's 4:30 something. 4 minutes and 34 second mile.
Per mile for 26.2 miles?
Yes.
For 26 miles, you have to run a 4:30 mile. For 26 miles. That is a sprint. For most everyone out there, they couldn't even imagine doing a mile in that pace. That is not an average pace for an average person. That's not even a pace for a really competitive runner. That's not the pace. Olympic level athletes have broken 4 minutes per mile. Running 4:30 is incredible. And you gotta do that for a whole marathon. That's nuts. I have never even run below like a 7 minute mile. I think the fastest I've done is like 7:30. That's the fastest. And I probably could push harder than that, but it'd be real close.
I did a 5 minute a long time ago.
That's not a 4:30.
No,
it isn't. No, 5 minutes. Yeah, that's about where you get like a really, you're in great shape. You can probably run below 6. 5 is really great shape. Definitely works, especially if you're not a runner, like predominantly. But man, for everyone out there, 2 hour marathon is fast, fast, fast.
Also, don't ask me to run a 5 minute mile right now. I think the best I'd probably get is like 7 or just below 7.
Yeah, I'm out of shape, so I wouldn't get
it. I'm out of shape too, so I probably couldn't do it right now. But if I started running again, maybe.
Yeah, I couldn't even run 1 mile at this point, probably.
I could do it. I would just feel like death afterwards.
Yeah, I would be in bad shape afterwards, but I could do it.
But anyway, it's time for not our history of times, but the history of marathons. So, the ancient Romans.
Oh my God. Well, actually, no, this makes perfect sense. It is definitely the ancient Romans here. So I can't really say that I should have seen this coming. Is what it was. Yeah, I accept this. I accept this.
They had nothing to do with the invention of marathons. That would be the ancient Greeks.
You're right. Ah, man. What's the difference? What is the difference? Is there any difference? No. All the same. Man, they're mad at me now.
According to Greek historian Herodotus.
I would make fun of you, but I'm not sure who you're talking about.
Herodotus.
I thought about something else. I didn't hear what you spelled.
When the Athenians? What the?
Athenians?
The Athenians? That's the word.
The Athenians? Okay, all right. Maybe you better hand the script to me there, big guy. Maybe you better let me take a crack at this one.
Listen, I've gotten some head trauma recently. It's getting worse.
I don't think your pronunciation of Greek names was any better before that.
We never know. We never know.
Give me a Greek accent while you do it. I can't wait for this.
I'm not even gonna try.
All right, okay. All right, fine.
The Athenians learned that the Persian army had landed at Marathon, Greece, on the way to attack Athens in 490 BC.
Is that your Greek?
A messenger named Pheidippides.
I'm sure that's wrong. I'm so sure that's wrong.
Pheidippides? I'm sending this to you.
Pheidippides, get your ass moving.
Pheidippides ran to Sparta with a request for help. This original marathon runner covered 161 miles of rugged terrain in less than 2 days. The Persians were subsequently defeated at the Battle of Marathon. The word marathon is the Greek word for funnel, which seems to have grown in the area and gave the battlefield its name. Fennel, not funnel. That's fennel. The word marathon is the Greek word for fennel, which seems to have grown in the area and gave the battlefield its name.
Uh-huh.
While the marathon wasn't part of the ancient Olympic Games, the first modern Olympic marathons were around 25 miles, which is roughly the difference between Marathon and Athens. Marathons were one of the events at the first Olympic Games of the modern era in 1896 in Athens, Greece, and it was included as a nod to the ancient games. And then one of the most chaotic marathons to ever exist was in the 1904 St. Louis Olympics, but we're going to cover that later when we cover the chaos that was the 1904 Olympic Games. The race was won with the official slowest time in Olympic history of 3 hours, 28 minutes, and 53 seconds by American Tom Hicks. So the slowest time in Olympic history. Now, the Boston Marathon, which is the one we're focusing on today, began on the 19th of April in 1897. It was inspired by the success of the first marathon competition in the 1896 Summer Olympics. It is the world's oldest annual marathon and ranks as one of the world's most prestigious road racing events. Its course runs from, I already talked about this, Hopkinton in southern Middlesex County of Copley Square in Boston. And it has taken place every single year up until 2020 when it was canceled due to COVID, the first cancellation in the history of the race.
Mm-hmm.
We have this beautiful image that I'm going to share with you.
I'll be the judge of that.
Of the course. That's the course. for the Boston Marathon.
Okay, well, that doesn't seem so bad.
And then this is the elevation changes that you see as they run.
Oh, it goes downhill? Oh, that's easy.
There's some steep hills. There's some steep hills, you know. There's some difficult stuff. This particular one that you see right here on the right is called Heartbreak Hill.
Yeah. I can
people
see that
have
being...
not only not been able to make it up, and unfortunately...
they keep breaking up with their significant others right then and there.
Yep, and then they'll also fall.
That's where they run by, and then they see their wife standing with their new lover, and they're like, oh no,
and they just give them the middle finger.
And you know, it motivates them to finish the race, but sometimes it doesn't.
Their significant other is making out with somebody else's significant other. Is that what you're saying?
That's it. Just everyone else's significant others gets bored of waiting for them to finish the race, and they just pair up right there at Heartbreak Hill, man.
Yep, they just start making out.
But if you look at it from the other side, it's also Heart Make Hill.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. For every heart broken, there's a heart spoken.
Heart unbroken?
Nah, that's rhyming broken with broken. We're not running this, are we?
No, not yet. We need to talk about the history specifically related to the Boston Marathon. But before we get into that, let's talk about how hard it is to qualify for the Boston Marathon, okay? You have to run other marathons within a certain time frame that officially meet the standards of a road race marathon and meet a time requirement to even be able to apply, because it is one of the most prestigious. Just this year, you had to beat the qualifying time by 5.5 minutes in order to be classified in your category. You had to beat your category by 5.5 minutes. The initial qualifying time in order to be accepted. Over 11,000 people were denied being able to participate in this year's Boston Marathon. To register this year, you had 5 days that you could do the registration. And that was September 11th to September 15th of 2023. So it's always the year before.
Okay.
And for the qualifying window, you have one full year, September 1st, 2022 through September 15th, 2023. That was the qualifying time you had to run a qualifying marathon in and make the qualifying times. So now, to go ahead and share with you the qualifying times.
This is expecting me to be able to beat these. I'm so ready. Give it to me.
Good Lord.
So babies can't run in it. So there's no baby mark. For the age group of 18 to 34, for men, you had to run it under 3 hours. For women, you had to run it under 3 hours and 30 minutes. And then if you classified under non-binary, it's the same qualifying time as the women's bracket. It just replicates the women's category.
I can't do a 3 hour marathon.
Each age group, as you can see, has their own criteria. 35 to 39 is 3 hours and 5 minutes. 40 to 44, 3 hours, 10. Even as high as 75 to 79, you have to complete it within 4 hours and 35 minutes.
Dude, I'm looking at the 80 and over category at 4 hours and 50 minutes. I still couldn't qualify for that one. It wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
It wouldn't happen.
Yeah, I don't think I could qualify at all either. I would have to train really hard. And this isn't what you have to run at the Boston Marathon. This is what you have to run at another marathon leading into Boston. I know the LA and Cincinnati are both ones, like the Flying Pig Marathon in Cincinnati and the Los Angeles one, are both meet the criteria to run in the Boston Marathon.
Okay, so I did some math, and 4 hours and 50 minutes, if I was running 10-minute miles, I could get 29 miles. So I could do a marathon if I could run 10-minute miles for 26 miles.
It's not happening! It ain't gonna happen! It's not!
Even if I was running 20, I'd be running 20-minute miles, because I would be walking them. I would get 14 and a half miles, and then I would die.
That's the perspective, just to be able to get into the Boston Marathon. And even then, because of this year, you had to beat that qualifying time by 5.5 minutes in order to be considered, because so many people were under that time by so much that they picked the fastest runners.
Ugh, I don't want to.
So it's even harder to get in. So qualifying in and of its own is hard. But let's get into the history, all right? The history of the Boston Marathon itself. The first Boston Marathon, after experiencing the majesty, the spirit of the Olympic Games, U.S. Olympic team manager John Graham was inspired to organize and conduct a marathon in the Boston area. With the assistance of Boston businessman Herbert H. Holton, various routes were considered. Before a measured distance of 24.5 miles from Metcalf's Hill in Ashland to the Irving Oval in Boston was eventually selected. Now, this is important because historically, marathons distances were shorter until they got extended to a further distance. They started out having to be 24.5 and eventually got moved to be 26.2 miles. I think that was just to round it out as far as kilometers go, because 26.2 miles is an exact round number for kilometers that I don't know the number of off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But on April 19th, 1897, John J. Dermott of New York emerged from a 15-member starting field and captured the BAA's first marathon with 2 hours and 55 minutes and 10 seconds to win the first ever Boston Marathon. In 1924, the course was lengthened to the 26 miles and 385 yards to conform to the new Olympic standard, and the starting line was moved west from Ashland to Hopkinton, where it starts today and has started since 1924. Yeah, so 24.8 miles was based on the distance run according to Greek legend, which is why the 24.8 or 24.5 ended up becoming the marathon distance. But it was changed in the 1908 Olympic Games in London because that year King Edward VII and Queen Alexandria wanted the marathon race to begin at Windsor Castle outside the city.
You heard it here first.
So that the royal family could view the
star. Right outside the titty. King Edward VII. He was he's looking really farsighted individual, looking past the titty. You know, he never stayed focused on the titty. He was looking to broader horizons, you know what I'm saying?
How was that slip? Oh my god.
Ah, man. Do you blame it on the concussion? Just blame it on that. Not anything pent up or anything like that. No Freudian slips here. Just brain damage.
The distance between the castle and Olympic Stadium in London proved to be 26 miles. And then the organizers added extra yards to the finish around a track, 385 to be exact, so runners could finish in front of the King and Queen's royal box in the stadium.
Yeah, their royal box, huh?
So it had nothing to do with kilometers like I thought it was, so...
Right, okay. Yeah, they didn't have kilometers back then. Turns out the imperial system started with those sons of bitches and their titties over in England. And they still kind of use it sometimes. It's their fault, not ours.
From 1897 to 1968, the Boston Marathon was held on Patriots Day, April 19th, a holiday commemorating the start of the Revolutionary War and recognized only in Massachusetts and Maine. The lone exception was when the 19th fell on a Sunday. And that race was held on the following day, the 20th. But in 1969, the holiday was officially moved to the third Monday in April. And since then, the race has been held on a Monday. The last non-Monday champion was current Runner's World editor Ambie Burfoot, who posted a time of 2 hours, 22 minutes, and 17 seconds on April 19th, 1968.
No titties?
No, not titties.
Oh, okay. Okay.
There's a historic story about the Boston Marathon in the sense of women finding a place in marathon running and breaking into the sporting world. The person who crashed the Boston Marathon and is famous for it in 1966, Bobby Gibb, was the first woman to run the Boston Marathon. She just wanted to be able to run the marathon. And she applied to participate in the marathon, but instead received a letter in her mailbox from the organizers of the Boston Marathon saying that she was disqualified. It stated that women are not physiologically able to run a marathon. This is back in 1966. So the Amateur Athletes Union prohibited women from running further than 1.5 miles at the time, and the organizers just couldn't take the liability of having her compete.
I remember this. I've seen this before. I've seen the picture of like people dragging down this woman who's just running. I just don't fathom the mindset. And then again, it's hard to fathom the mindset of a lot of people in that era and prior and now. But
yes.
It's like, are you protecting them? Are you mad that they could possibly like where's the anger coming from? I just don't get where it's coming from.
So she was 23 years old at the time. She hid in a bush near the start line, disguised herself in a hoodie and her brother's Bermuda shorts, and she joined the group of runners once half the men had already started running. Eventually, her identity soon was obvious, and she only received encouragement from spectators yelling, "Way to go, girly." 3 hours, 21 minutes, and 40 seconds later, she still ended up crossing the finish line ahead of 2/3 of the male competitors.
Hell yeah.
Watching the marathon for the first time in 1964, she just simply thought these are people who feel the same way about being a human animal on Earth, wanting to run, enjoying running, having incredible dignity, strength, and endurance, and to be able to run and participate in this and live their life. Her motivations were entirely based upon just wanting to do something that she loved and to break that barrier and basically slap them in the face for the concept of women can't do this because she's been able to do this for a while.
And it's like, it's, man, it's one of those things that always makes me want to point out to people that it's never the majority of people that have these opinions, because the bystanders, usually, like a lot of them, or at least it is the majority, that's like, yeah, that's great. Look at her go. This is cool. Why would anybody madden that? And then you get the few people that are just like raging assholes that are going to be like, oh no, it can't be. And it's just like people that are louder get angrier, and they get angrier and they get louder.
Yeah. So her initial idea was she just wanted to run. But when she got that letter, she was like, no, fuck you. And that's what her motivation became. That inspired another person to unofficially run the next time. By 1972, the Amateur Athletics Union rule preventing women from running more than 1.5 miles was lifted. And that year, 9 women competed in the Boston Marathon. So, and then it grew. In 1976, 78 women were running. And by 2017, 13,698 were female, more than 45% of the marathon's total runners at that time. So the Boston Marathon became very iconic in the sense of women being able to now run in marathons and breaking down the barriers in sport in a lot of ways. This was an iconic moment. Like you said, there are videos of people, officiants, trying to stop the runner, stop Gibbs from being able to finish. But eventually, there are actually some male runners, and I think there was an interview with her, and this may be incorrect, I don't know if this is the exact same instance, but who came to her aid to help her get away from these people to finish the race. But I think in an interview, Gibbs was talking about how some people came to help her and tried to form blockades around her so that she could still finish the race. That's why the Boston Marathon is so important. Now, to run the marathon, you don't need a lot. You just need shoes.
You don't need shoes. Didn't someone do a caveman marathon?
Probably at some point.
I think that might not have been the Boston Marathon, but I remember someone, nearly naked caveman, runs the Boston Marathon with no shoes, a loincloth, a bone necklace, and some bandana around his arm. Have you seen this?
I think I remember this being in the news at one point, yeah.
I got him, everybody! I beat Tyler at a sports fact! I did it! I taught the teacher!
Proud of you. Proud of you.
How many points does that give me?
1 point.
Oh, sweet. All right. I'm almost up.
Our points are more valuable than those guys over on Distractable.
Yeah, they don't know points. They just throw them around.
You do need clothes. You need to cover your private parts, all right? But a lot of runners will have, like, waist packs with some food, some energy bars, because it is hours of running. But there are stops along the way. Some people carry water, but most of the time there's cups of water at stations as you continue running on the path. There's some snacks that people will hold out. And then you usually have an armband to carry your cell phone or small camera. I know the Boston Marathon has GPS devices to track you. I think they're equipped to go on clothing, but a lot of times they put them on the front of their shoes because I think there's a pedometer with it as well. But there are chips to then be able to see when you officially cross the starting line and then finished at the finish line. That way it basically makes it easier to detect your time, and also make sure you didn't cheat, because that's also a thing that they pay attention to. While marathon running is a competition, it is usually based around your age bracket, your age group, and stuff like that. But more often than not, it's a competition against yourself to try and beat your own time. And in general, as Mark and I have said, neither of us can probably run a marathon to complete it in time requirements.
No way.
So even just finishing a marathon is an achievement in and of itself. Anything else you want to add about the marathon?
No. I think we've covered it pretty comprehensively. I mean, I've never had a desire to do a marathon. Maybe idly I've thought one day, maybe I could, just to say maybe, but I don't think I want to.
Well, one of the cool things about the Boston Marathon, because I just saw this fact, they were the first to sponsor wheelchair division in marathon. So there's actually wheelchair marathons, which is really cool. And apparently, when it officially recognized Bob Hall in 1975, so it was the first one to have a wheelchair division in 1975, and he finished with a time of 2 hours and 58 minutes. And he collected a promise collected on a promise by then race director Will Conley that if he finished in less than 3 hours, he would receive an official Boston Athletic Association marathon certificate, finishing certificate.
Nice. What can you do with a certificate? Can you sell it? Can you eat it?
It's just saying that you officially ran the Boston Marathon, and it's so limited. Like, amongst marathon runners, the Boston Marathon is something a lot of people dream of. My uncle's run it a number of times. He's been a marathon runner and runner extraordinaire for a number of years. And then my friend that I grew up with, I don't know if she's officially done the Boston yet, but I know when she ran the Flying Pig a ton, and I think one of her goals was to be able to run in the Boston Marathon. Like, even just being able to make it and be selected to go to the Boston Marathon and compete in the Boston Marathon is an achievement.
So all of you out there who have done it, congratulations. From me, that's a thumbs up.
And it's televised, which is really cool. So the Boston Marathon this year will take place on April 15th, so the Monday following this episode.
Oh, wow. So better get training, everybody, if you want to make it.
You can use the Boston Marathon to qualify, I think, for next year's Boston Marathon, which is really kind of cool.
Oh, what would stop anyone from just running alongside everyone else? Would they tackle you?
I think there's just crowds. I mean, probably with security and the incident that happened at the Boston Marathon years ago, there's probably significantly more security since that horrific accident or incident, not accident, horrific attack. Well, there, that's what it was.
Okay.
That's it. That's all. Ow. You just hit my mic's arm. So if you have any jacuzzis for us or you have primer suggestions, you can go to the Reddit. Just make sure and use the proper flair because jacuzzis are separate from episode suggestions. Give us a story as to why we should cover the topic that you talk about. It's reddit.com/r/GMFST. We do have merch, limited time, season 2 exclusive merch.
Store.gmfst.com.
What Mark said. So go and buy that. Check it out. There's a hoodie. There's a t-shirt. And I believe we have stickers even this time. Something new to add to the store that's limited edition. So,
wow.
Yeah. Outside of that, thank you guys so much for listening. And we'll see you next week when we actually finally get into Muay Thai or Muay Thai or however it's pronounced, because I'm already screwing that up.
Very Thai.
Yes. All right. Bye.
Bye.